With any product or anything someone's pitching, there's generally only one or two points of differentiation or value adds. And it's like, just lead with that and leave all the rest of the fluff out. No one cares about all that fluff. If you're looking to just hook someone's attention, tell them the like two or three points that really matter. And then once you get them hooked, you feed them all the information.
Welcome to the I Make a Living podcast, brought to you by FreshBooks, the number one cloud accounting solution for small business owners and their teams. I'm your host, Damona Hoffman, and I'm one of you, an entrepreneur who is focused on the future. I know we're all thinking about what we'll do when we escape this insanity we're living in, but are you really planning ahead in life and in business? Today's episode is all about positioning your brand for growth and thinking three steps ahead, even with everything going on around you. It takes a lot of planning and preparation to execute a successful growth strategy. That's why we're talking to Nicole Gibbons, interior designer and founder and CEO of Claire Paint, a big disruptor in the interior design market. Here's Nicole answering my usual first question, just like a former PR executive would. Nicole, tell everybody how you make a living.
I make a living selling paint for your home.
Okay, that was the most simple way to do it. And because you have a background in PR, I knew you'd be able to do that really succinctly. But just to give everyone a little bit more of a sense of your background, you've done PR and you worked for Victoria's Secret, but then you also started your own brand.
Yeah, so I founded a company 2 years ago called Claire. We're an e-commerce paint brand and we make the process of buying paint for your home super easy. And in my career, I think my real aspiration was kind of to be like the next Martha Stewart. I felt like there was no one speaking to our generation that I felt like I could relate to. I loved Martha Stewart, but she was in her 70s. I think she's close to 80 now. So I didn't feel like there was anyone of my age group that was an authority on home and design that I felt I identified with. And so my intent was to try and be that for this next generation of people who are young and passionate about their homes. And so the logical evolution of that meant building a media presence and then leveraging that to create a brand and physical products. And so I always had the big picture in mind from day one, right? And it was like, I'm going to do television. I'm going to have a brand. I didn't know exactly what it would look like, but I knew that I would create a physical product of some sort. And I kept thinking of ideas, all the obvious things that you would assume an interior designer might take on as a product category didn't excite me, you know, doing a line of furniture or a line of bedding. I didn't feel like those were particularly terrible shopping experiences to begin with. But I had this light bulb moment around paint. It was a really, really difficult product to shop for. And people really struggled to choose paint colors. And the way that people buy paint, like, you know, the experience in a big box store or a paint store is so archaic. So I saw an opportunity to change that too. And, you know, we live in this day and age where you can literally buy anything online, but paint, you had to lug yourself over to the hardware store, stare up at a wall of 3,000 colors. Why are there 3,000 colors? It was just this whole crazy, frustrating, overwhelming process. And I just immediately saw the opportunity. I saw the vision on like how we could simplify it, make it easier. And that's sort of how it all came to be. I really just wanted to do something different.
It's very brave for you to step out and go into a market where I don't know a lot about paint, Nicole, but I imagine there are these legacy brands that are really just owning the market. You really made a move that was a complete disruptor of the existing status quo in the paint world, right? So that took a lot of bravery. And I'm sure there are a lot of people that said, you're going to do an e-commerce paint store. That's not how it's done.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of haters. And I think no matter what, I'm sure you probably experienced this in your career too. There's doubters left and right. A lot of people looked at me like, oh, that's a cute idea. Good luck with that. Not thinking that I really had the balls to pull it off. And here we are. You're right. When you look at the companies that dominate, Sherwin-Williams is a 150-year-old company. They're also a $20 billion a year revenue-generating company with, I think, around a $50 billion market cap. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to create a better experience than what they've got going on. It's a bold move, but we're on our way, and it's been exciting.
And what a time to do it, too, Nicole, because obviously you couldn't have seen the pandemic coming.
No.
But at a time when people, one, are locked in their homes and are suddenly realizing that there are changes that they'd like to make their home more livable, and then
at the beginning of the pandemic, there was also this like confusion of, can we go to the big box stores? Can we even get these supplies that we need? You must have been perfectly positioned as an e-commerce brand to step into that void.
We were, because I think especially in the beginning of the pandemic, people didn't even really feel safe leaving their homes. It was so unknown. I live in New York, where at the time was one of the hardest hit cities. We were on a lockdown order and all this stuff. So if you were in one of those places where it was really affected by COVID, people were not leaving, especially to buy a non-essential item. And so we really stepped in and were able to help customers out. A lot of customers were seeking alternatives. You know, we had a lot of organic discovery around that time because people were looking for places to buy paint online. And then when they discovered Claire and saw how easy and convenient and, you know, how helpful our whole shopping experience was, it really, I think, helped fuel a pace of growth that was faster than what we were ever anticipating.
Okay. We skipped a few steps here. You're probably wondering the exact path Nicole took to get to this great moment in her career. I'll just take everybody back to the moment that you and I sat down in LA. I don't know if you remember this. An agent that I knew was like, you should sit down with this woman because she's just awesome. And she wants to do television. She's a designer. And I think you'd really like her. And then when we sat down, we realized that we both went to Northwestern. Yeah. And then you had a show, Nicole, like 5 seconds later on OWN. How did you do that?
I mean, I've had such a long, winding career journey. It's been pretty crazy, but I've also been quite blessed because I think success and opportunity is really about timing and being prepared and being in the right place at the right time. So it's a little bit of luck, a little bit of timing, and a lot of preparation so that you're ready when those opportunities come about. But I left my day job. I wanted to do TV. I think my PR skills really taught me how to network. So I did a lot of networking and came out to LA and started meeting with potential representation. And in one of those meetings, someone said the next day after the meeting, there's this show on OWN that's casting for a designer, and I think you'd be good for it. Can we submit you? And this person didn't even end up becoming my agent, but she submitted me for the show, and I auditioned, and I booked it. And it was simple as that. So I was on this show called Homemade Simple on OWN for 3 seasons.
And did that change your life?
It was an early morning cable show. And so I wouldn't necessarily say it was life-changing, but it was a really great experience that taught me a lot.
What do you think it did for you specifically?
A few things. I think number one, honestly, I'm not even going to front the like whole cachet of being able to say that I was on a show on OWN is really gives me a lot of credibility. It makes the resume look nice and shiny. And, you know, also I was early in my career pursuing television and I had the opportunity to be on set on a show 12 hours a day filming, learning the ropes of how to be on-air talent, how to hone my hosting skills and just my on-air personality skills and really understanding how a production like that works. You know, I think a home design focused show is a whole different type of production because you have this added layer of like construction and renovation. And this show was very DIY focused. So we were doing lots of DIY projects and, you know, so it was a lot, but it was a great experience.
So you had to dream it, but then also do it.
Yeah, I had to do it. And, you know, wasn't the biggest budget show. So I actually had to do a lot of the shopping and prep for the segments too. So I would be like at the big box store going to get the stuff that I would then use to make the DIYs on set. It was wild.
People think it's so glamorous. And that's why I asked you, like, did it change your life? Because I think, you know, as someone that's also done television, people are like, I just want to get in that chair and then that will open up everything for my business and I'll get that experience and that exposure. And it's like, it doesn't always change your life, but it does prepare you for the next thing. I always advocate for entrepreneurs to leverage major media to launch and grow their business. That said, it's not a one-size-fits-all solution and it's a little bit of a slow burn process. Even if you're not sure how media can impact you in your business, it's something to consider. But take note, Nicole's TV show wasn't a one-stop solution to a dream career. It didn't matter that her business didn't transform overnight because Nicole was thinking about the bigger picture. Her work at Oprah Winfrey Network prepared her for the next step, launching an innovative new brand to position herself as a leader in the home improvement market. So, take me back a little bit because there was also an important piece of this puzzle that we sort of skipped over. And that was building your own blog and your own brand as an interior designer. you made it sound really simple. And it sounds like you really charted out what this journey was going to look like to get you to where you are right now.
Yeah, in a lot of ways I did, but it was almost like I charted it out on a dotted line and I didn't know how the lines were gonna like fill in, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean? But I knew that when I started my blog, I was still working my day job. I started a blog in 2008. Like blogs were barely even a thing. You know, everybody had like a blog spot back then. No one monetized. There was no such thing as influencers. It was just people who were passionate about a topic like me. I wrote about home and design and all the things that inspired me. And it was a very niche topic. And, you know, I built an audience in a community of other people who really loved design too and wanted to read my point of view on that. And so it was very organic, but you're right. A lot of people hear like, oh, you quit your day job and then you were on TV 6 months later. But really, I was side hustling for 5 years. When I worked in PR, I would go to LA all the time. And whenever I would go to LA for work, for my PR job, I would always like go and have lunch with a casting director or really just kind of network. And I was pounding the pavement behind the scenes, building my confidence, my network, all these things for 5 entire years while working a very full-on 9-to-5 role. So when people hear, oh, you left your job and then you were on TV shortly thereafter, there was so much preparation and side hustle that went into getting to that point. And when I think about my career, everything I've done, I was so well prepared and a lot of time was put in before it was actually successful.
I often say on the show that I look at entrepreneurship as using everything that you have, everything you've done before. And I always say nothing is wasted. So some may look at prior experiences that you had as like, oh, well, that didn't lead to where you are right now directly. But there are little nuggets of wisdom and skill sets that you carry from one place to the next. Are there other places in your career that you can look back and say, I took that learning directly from that internship or that job or that mentor?
Yeah, I feel like it's every experience, right? So it's hard to point to just one, but I think maybe the most pivotal experience is like just number one, working in PR. I really learned the art of how to sell something, how to pitch, marketing. You know, I worked for a big brand, so I got to understand how an omnichannel business operates. So I think that experience, you know, I was in a job that, to be honest, I didn't particularly love. I wasn't passionate about it. I guess I liked fashion as a consumer, but working in the fashion industry in retail for that specific company didn't necessarily like motivate me and excite me every day. But when I look back on my time there, those skills that I gained while working there have helped me tremendously in every facet of my career, from my interior design career to parlaying that into media to what I'm doing now at Claire. It's helped me tremendously. So I think that, and then my media experience has been really helpful, not just being on camera, but being an editor of my own blog. And here and there, I would do kind of contributing pieces for other home outlets. I have that Northwestern communication journalism background, putting that to use. And I think those skills have helped me. You know, when I think about where we are at Claire and our marketing strategy is very content focused. And so being able to really have an eye for not just how to create content, but then how to create content specifically for the home category, which is something that I've been doing for 10 years or so before starting Claire.
Do you think content is a necessary part of business right now?
Maybe not. I honestly can't speak to other categories. I think if you are a consumer-facing company, particularly a company that's speaking to a younger millennial Gen X sort of female demographic, yes. Because if you think about how we consume media nowadays, especially in the age of COVID, it's like everything is so digital. We're glued to our phones. I think even now people are spending way more time in their mobile devices than even pre-COVID. So if you're constantly on your phone and you're looking at Instagram or TikTok or whatever, you kind of want to be there. You need to be in front of those customers on those platforms and on those channels. So I do think it's pretty critical. I also think consumers are pretty fatigued with so much advertising and so much messaging from brands that you kind of want to find ways to create content that will truly connect with them in an authentic way than just like running an ad in their face. And I think if you can create really strong branded content that adds value, that's, you know, one of the best ways to market your product.
You mentioned how much time you spent with networking. And I see that that's also benefited you in getting PR. I mean, you've been on so many shows and in so many magazines, Nicole, like on HGTV, TLC, Good Morning America, Rachel Ray, Elle Decor, House Beautiful, Better Homes and Gardens. I mean, you literally have been on every single magazine or category. So,
it's so what crazy. Is your,
it is crazy. And I know as someone that does a lot of media as well, I know a lot of that does come from prior relationships and nurturing those relationships.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've also applied that technique towards getting funding for launching this business. I want to know your networking strategy, if you have one.
You know what's so funny? And it's like, I've tried to coach people too on PR because I felt like I was a pretty successful publicist as well. And I don't even think I wrote a pitch. And I get a lot of PR pitches now that I have my own platforms and whatever. And I'm like, these PR pitches are so bad. These people are like, this is not going to make me respond to this email. And my strategy was really just to, number one, find a way to get to know them outside of a computer. Take my fashion PR days, I would invite editors out to lunch or go to events where I knew press would be. Or I also had the opportunity to host events on behalf of my brand where press would attend and I'd get to know them. So by the time you actually had to pitch them something, it becomes less of a formal thing and more of a like, hey, Damona, we're launching X, Y, and Z. Are you interested in covering this? If so, I can send you more details, right? Give a couple highlights. You don't have to make it a whole thing. And if you really know how to target your pitches adequately, you shouldn't be talking to people that wouldn't have interest in your product. And when you build good relationships, people will be upfront with you and say, yes, I'm interested. No, I'm not. And it's as simple as that. So that's always been my strategy. And even when it came to VCs, if I got a contact through, you know, an intro through a mutual contact, I would just be like, hey, so-and-so, you know, made the intro. I'm working on building this company. Let me know if you have interest in learning more. Here's a one pager. It was as simple as that. Like, I didn't overthink the whole initial outreach, but then it's like once that interest is there, then it's kind of how you take it from there that really, really matters. But the actual like art of pitching, I actually don't have any real formality around it at all. And I actually think that editors and media appreciate a less pushy pitch, so to speak.
I want to know what's in those bad pitches that you've gotten.
Oh my God, it's like terrible. And then the worst is when they don't even address you by name. It's like, dear editor, or they like put the wrong name.
The wrong name. Oh my gosh, yeah. I get that all the time.
It's the worst. And or when it's like a million paragraphs long, it's like, who has time to even read that? But I think with any product or anything someone's pitching, there's generally only one or two points of differentiation or value adds. And it's like, just lead with that. And leave all the rest of the fluff out. No one cares about all that fluff. If you're looking to just hook someone's attention, tell them the like two or three points that really matter. And then once you get them hooked, you feed them all the information versus like trying to lay it all out in one email because it's not really going to convince someone.
Well, you must be doing something right. I mean, between the media and then using those relationships you built also to raise $2 million in your first round of funding for Claire, pretty remarkable. Any advice you have for founders who are looking to get VC funding for their startup in how you were able to navigate? Because there's one is getting in the door, right? And I'm sure those were new relationships for you. But then the pitch in the room and getting people to see how your product is different and what your unique value proposition is a whole other thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think number one is just be unapologetic. You're going to have to reach out to a ton of people. Most of them are going to say no. You can't get beat down by the nose. You have to use those as learning opportunities for the next pitch. And yeah, you can't be worried about what someone's going to think or whatever. You just have to put it out there. And so you have to be really comfortable putting yourself out there and really comfortable with rejection. Maybe that's something that TV taught me too, because when you go on all these auditions, you don't book 99% of the things you audition for or the opportunities that you're up for, you know? So a lot of it is learning about something really exciting, maybe getting your hopes up. And then if you get your hopes up, you get let down. So I've also learned to just be pretty even keel about things and try not to get too excited because I don't want to be let down. And I approach it like business. And the nature of raising capital, it's very transactional, to be honest. It's a business deal. You are selling shares of your company to a venture fund, and they are buying shares from you to have ownership in your company. And they view it almost as more transactional than founders. I think a lot of founders have this very like idealistic, you know, fantasy land idea that these VCs are going to add so much value and help them guide them through building their company. And it doesn't always work like that. For VCs, you're one in 50 portfolio companies, and most of the, and they know the economics of how their funds are structured. Most of their most of their portfolio companies or most of their investments are not going to make it. Most companies fail, most startups fail, and they know that. So I don't think VCs are super emotionally invested either. So you can't be. And then I think the last tip I have is just be super confident in your business, because you can't go into a room trying to pitch your idea and you're unsure about things or you don't have certain data points at the ready. You kind of have to like know your stuff inside and out and be really confident when you're talking about your product, because it's going to be difficult for you to convince someone else to cut you a check to fund your business if you can't speak with confidence.
Mm-hmm. Such a good point. And we haven't really talked about this, but also you are a Black entrepreneur and the numbers aren't great for Black female entrepreneurs. They receive less than 1% of VC funding. I'm curious for you, how much of that was in your mind as you were pitching and launching Claire, or if you move forward with a different mindset?
I think it was more of an awareness, but I had a totally different mindset. I just have this sort of like tunnel vision focus when I want something, and there's nothing that makes me believe I can't make it happen. So to even have this idea that I'm going to start a company, paint company, paint brand, to compete with these behemoth multi-billion dollar companies that have been around for 200 years, it's a pretty lofty thing, but I never once didn't believe I could do it. I think I have a little bit more of an outlier perspective on the whole process because I'm really unemotionally attached to the whole idea of fundraising and venture capital and whatever. And because otherwise it's really easy to get discouraged, because pretty much everyone is going to pick your business apart. And if you don't have a thick skin and you don't have that maniacal focus and know what's right, even when someone is trying to cast doubt on what you believe to be true, you're going to flounder. So I just try to think differently. I think that's also one thing that's gotten me far, is just kind of thinking like an outlier as well. I have always gone against the grain and did the opposite of what people expect of me, and sometimes on purpose. You know, I'm kind of a contrarian. So I think that also has helped me, you know, really set me apart. But I do think there's a tremendous lack of diversity in venture funding. And I don't have the answers on what to do to change it, but Black women just don't get funded. The typical founder that gets funded is like a white dude who went to Harvard, Penn, or Stanford, who's already comes from money. It's like all those boxes, I checked none of them. Do you know what I mean? And so, yeah, if I would have just believed the data, I wouldn't have assumed I'd ever get this company off the ground. So,
do you feel like the tone has changed at all since the Black Lives Matter movement resurged over the summer and people started focusing on, like, we need to support Black businesses? Has the narrative changed at all for you or for Claire? Have you seen people taking more notice of you because you're a Black female-owned business?
For sure. I think that consumers, you know, there's a newfound wokeness in the world. I read a post on Instagram the other day. It was referencing Emmett Till, and it was saying something about like the fact that you have to put Black people's pain on display for the world to pay attention, and that being a really sad reality. And, you know, all of the events that have happened post George Floyd, I think, really opened the eyes of a lot of people who had the privilege of being able to kind of ignore all of these injustices that Black people know have existed since the inception of this country's founding. I think now people are, it seems as though they're trying to make an effort to diversify how they spend their money, to support more Black businesses, because I think people are starting to realize that systemic racism is a problem. And one way to help minimize that gap is putting more wealth in Black communities. There's been a lot of press doing roundups on Black businesses, you know, a lot of service providers that are trying to offer free services for Black businesses. And we've definitely benefited. We've gotten a lot of coverage. We ran a lot of roundups on, you know, Black businesses you should know about and that kind of thing. And that's really helped to drive a lot of growth for us. One highlight, I hate to toot my horn, but Beyonce created a roundup of Black businesses on her website that people should know about. And Claire was on there. So I think,
yes.
Yeah. I mean, that was definitely a highlight.
Toot your horn. Do it. That's huge.
That was exciting. That was super exciting. But, you know, I definitely think we've been recognized in a way that before we just weren't. You know, Claire was never, up until recently, focused on as a company led by a Black founder or a Black-owned business or anything like that. But I think in the past few months, that's really become a point that people care about. And so I think people are really talking about it. And the people who really want to help, I don't want to say fix, because the problems are not going to be fixable by buying paint from a Black-owned business, but people who want to try and take baby steps to try and support are really much more thoughtful about how they spend their money and where they direct their dollars.
That's good. I'm glad that you're seeing the benefits of that, and hopefully that trend will continue. I'm curious, as you have navigated through this period of major growth that you didn't necessarily anticipate, you couldn't have anticipated any of those things driving so much focus on your business. You're always prepared, Nicole, but do you feel like you were ready for it? Or have there been experiences that you've had over the last few months that you didn't prepare for that you could help other entrepreneurs look out for in the future?
There is nothing that could have prepared me for the craziness that this year has brought on, between the pandemic and just having to even manage my team and try to figure out, do we go back to our office? Do we not? You know, we ended up giving up our office and committing to working from home for the rest of the year. And then, you know, there's so much uncertainty about what's going to happen next year. All of the Black Lives Matter stuff was just a huge, actually personal growth moment for me, because up until that moment, I actually have never been comfortable speaking publicly about my beliefs on issues like social justice or even politics. I think because I had somewhat of a public-facing persona, I didn't want to be judged. I just kept those beliefs in my own private inner circle of friends and family, and that's who I talk about that stuff with. But you know, I wasn't one to be super woke on social media, for example. But when all that stuff went down and every brand was like, you know, posting the black squares and the stand in solidarity messages and whatnot, I really had a hard time figuring out, especially as a black founder, what is our point of view and how do we respond to this? And I wasn't even entirely comfortable. I was so afraid of having to respond to hate and hateful messages, or, you know, people who maybe weren't necessarily on the right side of what I believed is just a human rights issue. I took the point of view to create some educational posts on our Claire platform, and the response was so well received. And what that experience taught me was to not be afraid to use my voice, because the positivity that comes from it is going to be so much greater and more impactful than maybe the one or two people that like are trying to shine the darkness of negativity on your light. It taught me to be unafraid to just be myself and express how I feel and not fear judgment or backlash or even fear getting into debates. You know, I never really had the energy to be debating trolls on the internet, but I think now I'm much more confident in defending my point of view on these things, because these are issues that affect everyone, and me being a black person in America, you know, impact me deeply. And I never thought I'd be having to talk about these things as a founder either. So that's been a definitely a new experience.
Thank you for sharing that. That's also something that I've struggled with as well, is like using your voice and sharing your experience, when I feel like at the time that you and I were coming up, everybody was like, don't talk about that. Keep that to yourself. Just keep your head down, do your work, and just be great. And now everybody's like, no, share your story, tell everyone. And it's like a complete, there's dissonance, right? And you have to reframe that. So I'm glad that you found the voice and the platform to share it in a way that makes it comfortable for you. I want to know, I mean, I know you just started Claire, what, 3 years ago?
Well, we launched 2 years ago, and then I worked on the business for a year and a half before we launched, almost a year and a half.
Wow. Wow. You've done so much in such a short time. So maybe it's premature to ask this question, but I know how you plan ahead. What have you charted out next for you and for Claire? What are you thinking about as an entrepreneur? You got to be on the, you got to be thinking ahead to the next step.
I mean, well, you know, building a business like this is an undertaking that is way greater than anything I've ever done before. So it requires a lot of time and focus. My intent is to build this company into a large organization that becomes a go-to paint brand for people everywhere and can put ourselves on the same competitive plane and playing field as all of the biggest paint companies in the world. And I think that'll take a little bit of time. So I'll be super focused on Claire for the time being. But, you know, ultimately, we look forward to having a presence in brick and mortar, because even though we're delivering a great online experience, there's lots of people who still want that in-store experience, or even maybe the immediacy of being able to buy paint in a store. So we think about that.
I have to say, I didn't even know. Like, I've been aware of Claire for a while, and I just got to the point where I could start to even consider getting my home together. I didn't actually know that Claire was e-commerce only until I was prepping for this interview. I got to get my Claire paint life in order. Do you have a favorite color? Do you have a favorite part of your line?
Yes. Well, we just launched two new colors, and they were chosen with the help of our customers and fans. And I personally love them. So we did this March Madness style bracket called the Claire Paint Playoffs. We did color family matchups. So we had pinks, yellows, greens, and blues, and people kind of voted and narrowed down the brackets. And we ended up with actually two new colors. One is called Blued Up, and it's like a purpley blue, and it's really, really beautiful, really rich, and sort of a deep shade of purpley blue. And the other one is a seafoam green called OM Green. So those are my two favorites at the moment because they're brand new. We don't launch new colors very often. So I'm super excited about those. And then maybe the other color that's my favorite is the color that's in my living room, which is my home and my now workspace. And it's called Penthouse. And it's our best selling neutral.
Nice. I love that you came up with those paints through an interactive experience with your audience.
Yeah. I mean, you know, traditional paint brands have an average of 3,000 colors, like legit 3,000. That's the average number of paint colors a traditional paint brand carries. And that's ridiculous. So if you want something as simple as a white paint, you literally have to sort through hundreds of whites. It's crazy. So at Claire, our whole mission is fewer, better colors. They're all designer curated, and it's all the colors that you love and like without all the clutter. So we launched with 55 colors. And then last year, we did a crowdsource campaign to help choose our newest color. And then we just anniversaried that and put the little sports spin on it this time around. More than 2,600 people weighed in to help us choose these colors and helped us name it. So we, once the bracket closed, we opened it up for name submission. So our fans truly had an opportunity to help us co-create the color. And that way we can also be sure it's a color that people will actually love and want to buy.
Before you go, Nicole, we like to share the last piece of advice that you either gave or received. Do you remember what that is?
Yeah, I think it actually has nothing to do with work or career. My best friend, Lizzie, I was talking to her about some of the stuff we just talked about, like previously being afraid to voice my opinions or my beliefs and fearing judgment and all of those sorts of things. And she was just kind of telling me that when you are your most authentic self is when you will see, you know, the best possible outcome. That's when you'll connect with people the most. And to, you know, she was basically just saying, you don't need to put on a facade, just be you. And that you is like good enough. And that's the you that people will really connect with. And so that was advice that I really took to heart because, like I said, it's just a strange world out there on the internet. And you really put yourself out there and you never know what's on the other side of it. So I just have to kind of go out there and be me, and it's definitely going to be good enough.
I can't stress enough how important authenticity is in all aspects of your life. I saw the biggest career shift when I started leading with the traits that made me, me. When you lead with authenticity, people begin to associate your business with a real personality and you stand out among your competitors. Here are the other big takeaways from Nicole's interview. Think ahead. You're not out here building this business for your health, boo. This moment is a stepping stone to the big moves ahead. Plan for it. When Nicole says, be competent in your business, she means it. The best CEOs are tapped into all aspects of their organization. Ask yourself, what is my point of view? We're living through a big moment of social change. It's not enough to just observe anymore. Your consumers want to know where your brand stands on the issues. If you're tired of looking at the same house all day, every day, like me, definitely check out Nicole's work at claire.com for some paint and design inspiration. This podcast was brought to you by FreshBooks, the number one cloud accounting solution for small business owners and their teams. We have so many tools to help you financially during this challenging time. Check out the exclusive offer that's just for our podcast listeners at freshbooks.com/IMAL. That's freshbooks.com/IMAL, short for I Make a Living. Our audio engineer and composer is James Morris. Our associate producer is Leo Shell Villanueva. Our producer and director is Paco Arizmendi. And I'm your host and producer, Damona Hoffman. Let's connect. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Damona Hoffman or at DamonaHoffman.com. And remember to think at least one step ahead of the game because it's your business. See you next week.